attorney. Just give him a call.
This is Ask an Attorney, all about Ask Florida law with attorney Joe Pippin. If you have a legal question, call Joe right now in Tampa. Call 813-287-5700. Anywhere else, toll free at 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. The law office is open. And now your host, Joe Pippin.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law. I'm attorney Joe Pippin, practicing attorney, along with attorney Patrick Smith this morning. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning, Joe. Happy Saturday.
Hey, we are here to help you. We got up early just to come in to answer your legal questions. We do not have any other purpose than other to help you. So all you have to do is to call. Your question can be just about anything. It can be about wills, trust, probate, guardianship, power of attorneys, family law, personal injury law. Can be anything you can think of. It doesn't even have to be a legal question. Just can be a problem you have you're trying to get through. We've practiced a long time and have done multiple radio shows and have had guests on different practice areas, and we are here to help you in any way we possibly can. You have a toll-free number, 877-943-9673, 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open. Always like that first call to come in. Patrick and I talk to one another all the time. We'd much rather talk to you. Right, Patrick?
Yes, sir.
So, Patrick, I thought of an unusual question to ask you. Maybe not so unusual.
This is good. The unusual ones tend to make
And
me
we haven't
good.
Rehearsed this. He doesn't know what I'm going to ask him. In fact, we don't even talk about it. We just come in and do the show. We never really have a plan exactly of what we're going to do. We just take what comes.
Bit like, was it Mel Brooks and Alan Arkin, where they do the 2,000-year-old man? They never rehearsed that. That was always right. Just ad-lib. So,
gentleman discovers on Ancestry.com that he had a child. He's 50 years old. He had a child when he was 20 he didn't know anything about.
Okay.
And now he's just discovered it. They've had the DNA test and everything, and it's an absolute match.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Simpson case. 3 million to 1 chance this is not your child.
Right.
Okay. So he didn't know anything about this child. He had a heart attack when he found out and died. And he had a will that he left everything to his two children that he knew about, that were his for sure. So he had a surprise child, which caused him a heart attack and died, and he didn't have any language in the will about the child he didn't know about. Does that child have any rights?
I think it's going to be a Hail Mary of a shot, but under Florida's pre-termitted child statute, I think that's where you're going to have to hang your hat and try to argue your best case that, but for the father knowing about the child, he would have included the child. And that's why, and I've had similar cases where people say things like, well, the 60s were crazy. I have no idea exactly how many I may have. And so they will put clauses in. I omit all other children other than those specifically named herein. So you could draft around it, and I think that facts and circumstances, I think, are going to drive that case largely when it goes to trial. But that's one of those that'll probably settle out of court, though, because at the end of the day, it's all about, you know, the economics of litigation. But I think the child very likely has a leg to stand on, at least to get past summary judgment, you mm-hmm. know, to get to the rounds of subpoenas and depositions and that sort of thing, because it's in the spirit of the pre-termitted child statute, that's for sure.
I think he had the heart attack in my made-up question when his wife found out about it, because she didn't know anything about his past. But he. Let's go to Dan in Ocala.
Good morning, Mr. Joe Pippin. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. And you?
Oh, great. Got to go grab something to eat over here at McDonald's, but I thought I'd give you a call. Question about I won't mention the bank's name, but I've had this bank for quite a while. I'm also a disabled veteran, so back in 2011 and 2012 and 13, I was in that lost zone, you know, always angry and always hollered at people, whether it was the VA or my bank. Now the easy solution is has always been go get a different bank. But my question is I've been stuck in this bank jail forever, and I've written letters. And how long can a company? You know, I'm allowed to use the ATM machine, but I'm not allowed to go inside or call anybody. I have to send in, have to send an email. How long can they discriminate against a disabled veteran?
How do they keep you from going inside?
They sent me a letter back in 2012-13 saying that I couldn't do that.
But you can use the drive-through and you can use the ATM machine.
I can use the ATM machine. I just can't talk to nobody.
All right. Well, you want to share with us why they sent you this letter? What circumstances? What are the facts?
Well, like I said,
Mad at everybody and yelled at them.
Yeah, I was in that dark stage, you know, screaming at everybody at the VA, and it just spilled out into my normal stuff. I mean, I can't even do my AAA anymore. That's how serious that I was a screamer, and I cried about it at times, but I just, you know, yeah, the easy situation is going to be.
Why don't you have your doctor prepare a letter that you are now on some medication that you are not the same person you were 20 years ago, and have some medical proof that you've changed, and have a doctor kind of summarize your past and why you were that way, and the medications under now that you're not that way any longer, and plead your case. I don't know, Patrick, have you any other thoughts on that?
Yeah, Dan, first of all, thank you for your service, and I hear the struggle in your voice, and just know that there's a lot of people out there pulling for you, okay? Because a lot of you veterans suffer in silence, and you guys certainly deserve all the support and things.
Well, I just don't understand. Yeah. I don't understand why organizations or people, you know, if they know, you know, I got my arms and legs, but a lot of people don't know PTSD or whatever, and they just keep you on some kind of chokehold forever, like you should be punished forever. You know, I feel like I'm some kind of super high criminal or something because I've been the name called.
Yeah, I think if you have a doctor's letter and you plead your case that you were a vet and you suffered certain things, and now you are older and under different medications, and you don't act the way maybe that you acted in the past, and you want a second chance, as you know, as a military vet. I mean, I think a nice letter could be drafted in your behalf that might get you a good result. I mean, I just think that's possible.
All right, sounds like some good advice from a good advice person, Mr. Pippin.
All right, thank you, sir. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you so much. God bless you.
God bless you. All right. Patrick, the fun part about it, this show, is you never know what you're going to be asked, and you have to think pretty quick on the spot sometimes, which is fun for me. I really enjoy that part of the show.
When we're between calls, we can go back to day one and some of the first calls that I ever took live with you, because there were some zingers in those early days.
Oh, yeah,
for sure.
One lady called and wanted to know if she could probate her own will.
I remember that.
All right, phone lines are open. Love to talk to you this morning, 877-943-9673-877 is your toll-free number, 943-9673. Hey, if you'd like to watch Patrick and I do the show, we're on WeBeamTV.com this morning. And every other week we film the show. And actually, your question could be used later because we pick and choose questions that we think will be helpful to everyone. And we'll slice out like one question and put it on YouTube and Facebook and LinkedIn and some other social media sites. But let's go to Tom in Haines City.
Good morning.
Hey, Tom, are you listening to WLVF?
Yes.
Well, very good. We were talking about, Patrick and I were talking about the many years we've been on that station and doing, helping with a telethon and Dr. Carter and all the good. We had a lot of good memories of, and the old radio station used to be a little shack on, was 544.
Yeah, the cow pasture.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's right across from my current church now.
Oh, yeah? Okay, what can we do for you?
Okay, my daughter was badly beaten by her husband. Mm. So they are now separated, have been since August of last year. Divorce papers are in the process. They have been filed.
Mm-hmm.
Is he still required to provide her medical?
Provide her medical records?
Insurance.
Insurance.
What's she was on his medical before.
Well, okay, so does she have an attorney during the divorce proceeding?
No.
Well, she needs one because she can get asked for certain things, you know, like she could ask to stay in the home and have him live somewhere else, and she can ask for medical costs. And
she just wants out, and she filed a simple divorce with no property, no children, and she has a litigation hearing coming up in March.
Okay, but she wants to for him to pay for her medical health insurance costs?
Until the divorce is final. So I'm just wondering, is there a law when they're separated, does he have to continue with the health insurance?
No, there's no law that says he has to.
Okay, that's all I need
to know. But she should have an attorney fight for what she wants, and she wants her medical costs paid, and he's able to pay him.
No, this guy is just a bum.
I see.
He's an ex-cop. He got away with beating her, and she was arrested, but she's now on diversion.
She was arrested?
She was arrested. My daughter was arrested. This guy is 6'4", about 300 pounds. My daughter is 5'2", 125 pounds.
So a phone call went to the police about the abuse, and she's the one that wound up getting arrested?
Yeah, like I said, he's an ex-cop, knows how to, you know, put things in, to twist things around.
All right. Well, I'm real sorry for your circumstance there.
Okay, thank you for your answer. Appreciate
all right, thank
it.
You. All right.
Yeah, bye.
Let's go to Mike in Ruskin.
Good morning.
Hey, Mike.
I'm a snowbird. Good morning.
Well, how long are you going to be down here?
We come down for like 4 months right now. And then I come down into.
So you leave around Easter, right after Easter?
Well, we're going to come down first week of January and leave. Right now we're leaving first week of May.
All right.
I come down in June, August, October, a couple weeks by myself. Tend to the sailboat, tend to the house. We have a house and stuff down here. So I'm the property owner here.
All right. What can we do for you?
I have a little. Well, I'm thinking about the election 2020. So I'm registered to vote in New York State.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking, well, you know, New York State's a blue state, and my vote for the presidency wouldn't count. Florida's kind of a purple state, and it could, you know, it's been a kind of a swing state. So if I wanted to vote for the president,
mm-hmm.
I might want to switch my voting down here.
Well, you have to become a Florida resident, though.
Well, a permanent resident?
Yeah, you to
I'm a
vote.
I'm a property owner.
No, well, my understanding is, and I don't do election law, and I haven't looked at that question, but my thought would be that you have to have a driver's license and declare yourself to be a... You don't think so, Patrick?
Well, so first of all, just because you own property here doesn't make you a resident here, nor does the lack of property ownership make you a non-resident. Florida's residency test is really intent-based, and it's driven by facts and circumstances. So if you are taking some sort of homestead or special tax election back in the state of New York as an in-state resident, that's going to torpedo you claiming any sort of Florida residency for federal election purposes.
And do you have a job in New York? Are you retired?
I have a small business. I'm selling my business probably next month. Be closing next month.
Well, if you sell your business and your intent is to be a Florida resident and you get a Florida driver's license, I think you could register to vote. That's my thought.
Even though I'm not here 6 months.
Yeah, there's no 6-month rule in Florida like there are some states.
Okay.
It's based on intent. And you basically have to, in my thought, and I might be wrong, I think you have to become a Florida resident to be able to register to vote in Florida.
Right.
Yeah.
And if I'm not mistaken, the president is actually a resident of Florida.
He is now, right.
But I doubt that he's here 6 months out of the year. So.
Yeah.
That's true.
It's intent. Yeah. And usually residence rules are driven on a little bit of proof, and a driver's license is great proof, and a voter's card is proof of your resident of Florida once you get your voter's card.
And by the way, I have my Instagram live up, and someone on here just said, actually my buddy Tuna, it's his birthday today, happy birthday Tuna, he just said he'll vote for Trump for you if you want, just as a favor to you.
Please do.
Okay.
And vote twice, no.
This is not Cook County, Illinois, no.
So my wife is going to not change. She's a New York State person, and she's not ready to make that split yet, but I'm looking at, you know, every vote counts thing, and I want to, like, say, okay,
Now, I represent clients all the time who are resident, a husband and wife, one's resident one place and the other's resident somewhere else.
So. All the time.
And it might be like you. It might be they have a business, and when they sell their business, they both become Florida residents. But there's some purpose for one of them to be in New York and so forth. In fact, I know policemen that go around to parking lots here, and if you're working in a Florida company and your car's in the parking lot without a state tag, you get a ticket. I mean, basically, because you didn't change your license within so many days.
Yeah.
All right. All right,
hey, thank you.
Thank you for calling.
Good day.
All right, thank you. Let's go to Jim in Jacksonville.
Good morning. I'm a current property owner for a residence up in Wisconsin. Had a property management company for several years. Late last year, 2018, I guess that's a little over a year, I stopped hearing from my property management company. They would not take my phone calls, would not reply to any of my emails. Excuse me. Long story short, they ended up owing me a little over $4,200. And I have not been able to get in contact with this company. Come to find out, it seems like they went under. They were an LLC company. And I would just like to know what my options are to get... my funds for my residence.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know what the small claims court limit is in Wisconsin, but in Florida it's $5,000. And what you probably need to do is get an attorney to write a letter, a kind of a collection letter. And the recourse would be, if that letter doesn't work, to probably file a small claims court action where in Wisconsin. In probably the county
now,
where the property is located.
Okay. Now, what if they were an LLC? Does that protect them for any negligence on their behalf?
Is the contract with the LLC?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you sue the LLC. So the LLC Patrick?
Yeah, and you would definitely want to try. I mean, this is going to be a question of Wisconsin law, so you definitely want to consult Wisconsin counsel. But you want to try something in Florida we would call piercing the corporate veil to show that the LLC wasn't really there, that they didn't operate it properly, and that you could go after them personally. But which county in Wisconsin? Was it Manitowoc County by chance?
No, it's Milwaukee County.
All right. I was just curious. Have you seen that documentary, Making a Murderer?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. It's about Manitowoc County, Wisconsin, and I got about 45 minutes into it. My blood pressure couldn't stand it anymore because of the...
Is that the island that you go over to? That
no, something up there. It's not. But just watch it, and the lawyering that goes on. Just see if your blood pressure can last more than 45 minutes, because mine couldn't. I was just like, this is awful. I gotta walk out of the room. So, but
that's true. No, I have spoken with a lawyer, and nobody really wants to touch this because they're just saying, you know, you'll put in as much lawyer fees as. You know, you'll get out of
yeah, well, that's what they have small claims court for. But unfortunately, if you don't have an attorney, you have to go up there yourself. And then there's that cost, unless you're going to be up there anyway.
I'll be up there anyway. Could I do small claims court and lift a corporate veil? Or would I need an attorney for that?
Yeah, I would definitely recommend consulting an attorney, because there's going to be really specific statutory standards as to what is needed in evidence to pierce that corporate veil. So you definitely want to at least have a consultation with an attorney.
And also in Florida, there's a difference between LLC, where there's just one owner.
And a
multiple owner.
Yeah.
Okay.
What some people would do, now this is not legal advice because you've told me that the LLC is involved, but some people would sue the individual and the LLC, and if the other side never shows up, you get a default judgment. And then you can go looking for something. If you sue both of them, both the person and the LLC, and you get a judgment against both of them, then you might be able to get a default judgment because they don't show up. Then you might be able to use that to collect on an asset that you can find.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you, gentlemen.
You're welcome.
All right, thank you. Patrick, once in a while I'm sitting with a client and I gave them the legal answer.
Mm-hmm.
And then I turn around and say, look, I'm going to take my legal hat off.
Mm-hmm.
and give you the non-legal answer.
Right. You say this is the counselor side.
This is what I would do, which is not a legal answer or legal procedure, but this is exactly what I would do.
Let me shut the office door and give you this answer.
So then I make a note that we discussed it, but I didn't give him any legal advice in there. So. All right. So anyway, that's fair, I think, to give somebody, this is a very difficult thing, and there's a legal way, here's a legal answer, and then, there's something else you can think about type of answer. Hey, phone lines are open right now. We'd love to talk to you. Patrick and I talk to ourselves enough during the week. We'd love to talk to you at 877-943-9673. 877-943-9673. And if you have a legal question at all, it can be about any area of law that you have a problem with, something that kept you awake last night.
The Secure Act is coming up a lot. People wanting... I actually had my first speaking engagement this last week on the Secure Act, so I'm surprised we haven't gotten any questions about that yet.
Yeah, we're working on language to change the retirement. Some people, not everybody, maybe a small percentage of people, one of the largest assets they have is their retirement account. And if they have a special circumstance where they don't want the child to be able to cash it all out immediately, you have the beneficiary of a retirement account come into a trust, and then you dictate the terms of the trust. And before, you could create a document where the beneficiary would only get the required minimum distribution. And so they would stretch that out for a long period of time, and it would be like a retirement account set up for the child, and they're guaranteed X number of money for the rest of their life because the trust doesn't give them any more than that. Now, under the new Secure Act, you have to take everything within 10 years. And then they don't even have to take it all at once. There is no minimum. So it could be all, you could dictate that they don't get it till the 10th year.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the age of the required minimum distribution changed from 70 and a half to 72. Mm-hmm. And on traditional IRAs, you can now contribute indefinitely, which is a big shift. And then they made some rules about safe harbor retirement accounts with regard to small business owners. But this was actually part of my, in addition to your birthday dinner, this was part of my anniversary gift to you and Bev, because I don't know if you realize it. The Secure Act was passed on December 20th.
All right.
So there you go.
Anniversary
celebration. Happy anniversary.
Well, thank you. Actually, it creates a lot of work, so I don't know if that was much of a gift. And you can't imagine if you've got 51,000 files and you never earmarked which ones of them were drafted so the retirement account could come into the trust.
Huh.
You have a hard time locating or a system to go back and dig all that out to notify the people that need to change their trust. But we send letters to clients. Our firm sends letters every day out to a number of clients telling them we haven't seen you for 3 or 4 years and it's time to renew and update. And so we are in the process of doing that almost every day. You have a toll-free number. Phone lines are open at 877-943-9673. 877-943-9673. So, Patrick, another one of these questions that I don't know why at night I think of weird questions to ask you.
Exam questions?
Yes. So you have a surrogate mother child.
Okay.
So you've paid a lady to carry your baby because you couldn't have one.
That's right.
But it's with...
It's always been a dream of mine, but it's not going to happen. So
yes.
I carry my own baby.
So. All right. So... So what is the rule about what that child, as it grows up, might be entitled to as far as an inheritance?
Well, in most cases and in most states, there's contracts regarding these sorts of surrogate relationships, and specifically defining parental rights. And as I understand it, in most states, it's a matter of the child's born and then legally adopted away from the birth mother, which adoption in Florida stands for TPR, which is a termination of parental rights from the birth mother, which means the child has no right or expectation to inherit from the birth mother, which doesn't stop birth mom from leaving funds to that child, but it stops the child from claiming any funds, like under pretermission or anything like that. And the child would take by the adoptive mother or parents and be treated as a natural biological child at that point forward.
Do you know I'm a character in a book? They use my name, Attorney Joe Pippin, and I represented Angie Hunt. I don't know if you've met Angie and Gary. Mm-hmm. Hunt. Angie Hunt wrote a book, and she made me the character with my permission and everything, and I represented a surrogate mother mm-hmm. who's they couldn't have children or didn't think they could have children, and there was a surrogacy, and then they had a child, and then the husband came home from the war,
mm-hmm.
But he died, but they had a weekend where they had contracted not to have sex, but they did.
Uh-oh.
And she had a child.
Uh-oh.
And it determined later that was her natural child as opposed to the surrogate father who owned a big winery in France. I was a great character. I was a good guy in this book.
See, I was a character in a book as well, but I got to play a bad guy.
Patrick Smith, the bad guy?
I was an evil colonel in a spy thriller. So, yeah.
Patrick
Smith?
Well,
the bad guys always have more fun. Like, let's be honest. Like,
all right. Phone lines are open right here. 877-943. Well, maybe while they're on Earth.
That's right. That's right.
But then there's no fun later.
Judgment Day coming, right?
So. No fun after that. 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open a little bit more than halfway through the show. We'd love to talk to you if you have a legal question. We'd love to help as many people as we can during this 52-minute straight run with no commercials. 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open, and love to take your call if you have a question you'd like to ask us. So, Patrick, what's your most often... People come in from out of states, out of state, and they have an out of state will. And I'm sure you deal with that almost every day, like I do.
Sure.
So, what do you you review an out of state will? How does the conversation usually go with those type of meetings?
So, first of all, we're dealing with their neighbor down the street, who's a legal expert, has already told them that their out of state will or trust is no good in Florida just because they crossed the state lines. And once I tell them, if this was valid in New Jersey or New York or Pennsylvania, it's valid here. So we're not reviewing it for validity so much as we are for efficiency. So we want to make sure that the document achieves the goal of getting the most real dollars to your intended beneficiaries as quickly as possible. And a lot of times we don't get past the first line before we found our first inefficiency. I, a resident of, and, it's saying some other state. And it may be a rather innocuous state, Wisconsin, or it may be like North Carolina, but if it's a state that's pretty aggressive under their Department of Revenue, like Minnesota, you can have some issues where they try to tax because they say, well, my gosh, what's one thing all residents of Minnesota do? They pay Minnesota taxes. So you have to sort of battle. You're going to win the battle, but you have to battle that out. The other issue is with regard to the self-proving status of the will. So again, completely valid will from another state, but it doesn't meet Florida's self-proving requirements. Means when you pass, we have to go and locate one or both of those witnesses and have them sign oaths of witness, report to the court, and then begin the probate. So it's a matter of achieving optimal efficiency. And a lot of times by updating for Florida, we're not making the document any more valid, but we're making it far more efficient. And that translates to more real dollars going to the beneficiaries.
All right. You have a question again, 877-943-9673. Let's go to Alice in Tampa.
Hi. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
I wanted to say Alice in Wonderland, but I see you're from Tampa.
Yeah. So. No problem. Is it legally possible to have a husband and wife have different homesteads in the state of Florida?
Have two homesteads? No.
So if you're married, yeah, you can't. One husband can't have a house that's a homestead that's closer to his work, but the wife have another house because she wants to live there.
One homestead is it.
Okay. And then is it legally possible if we have a child, a son, who's in college, and we can he have a homestead?
Yes. Yes, you can buy a second home. Well, he has to be a primary residence, and you can't rent it out to other folks, to other students. But
and Alice,
right.
be careful. Be careful, because if your end game here is, well, we'll get around this by putting the child's name on the property so he can declare homestead on it. Remember, in the eyes of the IRS, that can be deemed a taxable gift. And then number two, if the property's entirely in his name, that's fine. But if it's not entirely in his name, it may not be entirely homestead, and that means it could be exposed to creditors. So just be very, very careful about how you structure that, okay?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I just thought, I mean, is it even possible, or should I even consider that? Because we do want to gift it to our son, but...
Well, a lot of people would buy a residence in the college town instead of paying dorm rent or... they would buy a house in the college town. They could become a homestead for the student. And it also, when he or she finishes college, they can sell it and usually make a profit. I mean, homes in college towns continue to go up in value all the time, and I think it's a good thing to do, actually.
But even if he goes to college in another state, though, is that possible?
No, he'd have to be a primary residence there. I mean...
Okay. So he can't be
homestead
in college.
Well, I think he'd have to go to the. I think he'd have to live here. You know, if he goes, I don't think you can get a homestead in Florida for a son who goes to college in another state and call it his homestead.
It really depends on which homestead we're talking about, Alice. Are we talking about ad valorem property tax homestead, like trying to save money on your property taxes?
Yes. That's,
yeah. If that's the question,
I guess so, yeah.
It's 6 months in a day. Now, if it's constitutional creditor protection homestead, that's a different analysis altogether, but it doesn't have the 6 month and a day requirement. But if your goal is to save money on property taxes, yeah, he's got to be here.
Okay. Yeah, I just wondered. But thank you very much. Appreciate
All right.
your
well,
show.
Thanks for calling. Thanks for listening.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thank you.
Bye.
You're listening to Ask an Attorney on multiple stations all through Florida. I'm going to talk just a minute. When you get ready something to write with, we're going to give out our poster sheet, if you want one, all about estate planning. So if you like thinking about reviewing your estate plan this year, or maybe even creating a new plan this year, you'd love to have our estate planning poster sheet. It's like 5 articles on one side. Lots of valuable information about your options in estate planning. On the other side has all of our contact information all over the state of Florida with our different offices, phone numbers and attorneys and website and radio shows and all that. We'd love to mail it to you. All you have to do is you can ask for it one of 3 ways. You can call our toll-free office number and ask for it, which needs your name and address. You can view it on our website, but it'd be much better if you just ask for it, because it's a large poster-sized double-sided sheet. And you can call 1-800-226-3529. That's 1-800-226-3529. Go to extension 200. Name and address. We'll mail it right out. Mail it out within a day or so.
And to the first 100 people, they can get the limited edition ones with mine and your autograph on the same poster sheet. That's never happened before.
Yeah, I don't know about that. we'll get your autograph on your papers when we notarize
it. There you go. Even better.
Even better.
Even
all
better.
Right, right. And if you'd like to email, you can email Joe, J-O-E, and just say, I want the poster sheet. Just need your name and address. Joe, J-O-E, at attypip.com. That's Joe at attypip.com. And you can text your name and address at 727-667-3967. And if you want to talk to Patrick and I on our way out of here today between 9 and 10, you can call that number, 727-667-3967. Let's go to Joanne in Sarasota.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a little Patrick, a grandson, who has gone to a parochial school for 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And his parents are not going to let him continue on to the high school. You know, it's costly to go to those schools in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to sort of, I'm thinking of trying to pay for it. But I have sort of a medical situation that could make my sell-by date come before I wanted to. And I was thinking of how I could arrange it that the tuition would be paid out of my estate. That's question number one. And question number two is, I'd like to leave some small amount. I don't have a vast estate,
mm-hmm.
but I'd like to leave something. And he's only 15.
Mm-hmm.
for him to get, like, say, when he's 30.
Sure.
And I don't know who to put in charge of it.
Well, let me give you some choices here. So it sounds like a trust would probably work the best, not knowing any more than I know, having talked to you for just 30 seconds so far. But it sounds like a trust to me would be the best. So you create a trust, put assets in the trust, and you say that the trustee, and we'll talk about that in a second, can pay for college medical expenses up until age 25 or 30, and then pay the money directly to for education, directly to medical expenses when the beneficiary you have in mind turns 30. If that's the age you pick, then they can get an outright distribution. If you don't have anyone to be the trustee, you have several choices. You could choose an attorney. Patrick and I are successor trustees and personal representatives on a few of our estates, and glad to help people do that when they don't have any other choice. You can choose a bank that has a trust department or a financial organization that has a trust department.
Like SunTrust or something.
Yeah.
Now, the child is in Maine.
Well, that doesn't matter where the child is, I don't think.
Uh-huh.
So sometimes a CPA or one of your trusted advisors who doesn't have a conflict of some type, like a financial broker usually has a conflict in being the trustee. But the
right.
financial advisor might have an organization that has a trust department, which would be a little bit different.
Yeah, you just gave me an idea of a young person I know and trust.
There you go.
Yeah, the other thing is my residence would have to be sold. That's quite a good asset. That's where mm-hmm. the money would come from. So the father, my son, would want to come in. He would, get the other things, but can I stipulate that the money comes from the sale of my residence?
Do not do that. Yeah.
Say again?
I would say do not do that. I would say if you just leave...
Yeah, you just don't put the residence must be sold.
Yeah, if you do that, you're going to sacrifice some significant creditor protections.
Now the residence will be sold because that's what a trustee or personal representative will do, but you don't dictate that in the language of the document because then you have cash in the estate which could be subject to medical claims or nursing home expenses or other
anything.
Creditors.
I see.
So the homestead...
So
You just list the beneficiaries. You don't give a direct order the property must be sold.
Oh, I see. Oh, in other words, I list the fact that the tuition for the school must be paid.
Yeah, exactly.
Got it. You left us hanging on that book when the man came home from the war, and you got off on another tangent. We don't know what happened.
Yeah, Joe. How'd it end?
Well, it ended that the surrogate mother got to keep the child.
Okay.
All right.
You get me thinking, and I enjoy it every
All right.
Saturday.
Well, thank you so much.
And thank you both.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Hey, you're listening to the longest-running radio show in Florida, 35 years. No one has been in Florida, to my knowledge, have been the same format, same show, same host for 35 years and running.
I was three.
And Patrick was 3 years old. And his mother first heard me. I know she's listening.
She is.
She is listening.
Guaranteed.
She listened to me for a long time, and then she called me and said, "Do you hire interns?" And then I said, "No, I've never had one." And so basically, Patrick called me, and we hit it off great.
I was the first call you got that Monday.
Yes.
Yes, the first call. So,
all right. So phone lines are open. We only have like 10 minutes left in the show. If you want to call, we'd love to talk to you at 877-943-9673. 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open. If you have a question of any type, you can call the show. So, Patrick, someone gets injured, and the attorney negotiates a big settlement check. And then they die before they actually get the check. So what happens with that going into the estate?
It would have to be probated, typically. Now, I've seen recently where we've had some wrongful death cases where the settlement is not going into the estate. It's going directly to family members. But these are all settlements coming in on the decedent who passed and whose estate we're probating already. But you're saying they've suffered an accident, they negotiated settlement with their counsel, check comes in payable to them, they've passed before they cash it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's clearly a probate asset. You're going to have to open a probate and get letters of administration deposit it in the estate account, publish notice to creditors, inventory, counting, petition for discharge, the whole nine yards.
You know, a problem I see with our clients that is just kind of sad is that a spouse passes away, and then the second spouse passes away, and they name their deceased spouse as beneficiary.
All the time.
With no contingent beneficiary.
All the time. They never revisit. And that's one thing I tell clients, and I say this at speaking engagements, I say, check your beneficiaries. I mean, there's the famous story from my alma mater from Chapel Hill, one of our not-so-great alums, was court-ordered after he ran off with his mistress, was court-ordered by the judge to buy a life insurance policy, make his ex-wife the owner, and pay the first 5 years premiums. So he does all that. Well, 20 years later, after she's paid the next 15 years premiums, he dies. And she goes to collect, can't get it because it's already paid. She never checked to see who the beneficiary was, and he did exactly as the court ordered, made her the owner, he paid 5 years, but he made his new mistress the beneficiary, and she never checked in 20 years to see. So you got to revisit your beneficiary designations, and again, it's about optimization. You got to update. Life changes. You got to update accordingly.
All right, tell everyone what the rule is now about if you have your ex-wife as the beneficiary or ex-husband. As a beneficiary, and you die.
Yeah, unless you renew that intent. Say that one more time.
What all right, so husband dies, let's say, and his ex-wife is a beneficiary.
Okay, so unless you've renewed the intent to bequest that money or beneficiary those funds to that former spouse after the divorce, it treats the former spouse as having predeceased the other spouse. So if you went in and signed a beneficiary update after the divorce and it had that ex-spouse on there, then it stands. But if it's just something you let stand when you got married and then you divorced, it's as if that spouse had died. Mm-hmm. It goes to the contingent beneficiary after that spouse.
Yeah, and if there is none,
then it goes to probate.
Probate. Let's go to Jerry in Jacksonville.
Hi. I went to a lawyer maybe 3 or 4 years ago to set up my, I guess it's a living trust, and so I have a representative and a executor. It's the same person and the same secondary person. Considering the amount of stuff that they have to read through, I'm wondering if it was wise to, well, I guess the question is, can I have a lawyer do this instead of having just laymen?
Oh, absolutely. Patrick and I know I'm going to say 5% of our cases we are asked to serve as a personal representative of a trustee. A lot of times people choose family members or uncles or other professionals within they know or in their family, but probably 5% of the time people don't have someone they trust to get it done properly or don't have the knowledge, or sometimes there's a stretch distribution. You never put somebody in charge of their own stretch. So we get the opportunity on many times to serve in that capacity, and I have a case in Jacksonville right now where I'm the trustee, and you know, one son, great family, good job, and the other son had a little addiction problem, and we couldn't give the money directly to them, so they had the father wanted me to didn't want to use a bank. Father had me be the trustee, so we send him a check every 2 weeks and take care of any other emergency needs that come up for him.
And Joe, you've done an amazing job as trustee on that case because
you have a good attorney.
You have a great attorney.
I have a good attorney.
You have a great attorney.
All right, Jerry, did we...
I have a further question.
All right.
Is it wise to go to the same lawyer that did the original paperwork, or should I go to another one? Is it a conflict of interest on his part?
No. I don't consider it a conflict when someone asks me to serve as trustee. So I'm sure if you have a good relationship with your attorney, you can just ask them if he would accept that. And if he says yes, then go with him. Ask him what kind of experience he or she has serving in that area, and if you feel good about that, you would like for that person to be your trustee, that'd be great.
What kind of fee might I expect, percentage-wise?
Well, why don't you ask the attorney?
Okay.
So there's usually a trustee fee, just being the trustee is like 1%.
Uh-huh.
And then ask the attorney what other fees. If you should have a little fee understanding agreement with the attorney that you choose. Like when we're asked that, we have a little fee agreement that we get the client to sign.
And just so you know, too, it's going to be a situation where the trustee's fee isn't just imposed. It's what we call a reasonable fee under the trust code. And the reasonableness is policed by the beneficiaries, the people who feel the impact of the fee. So know that it's a very transparent, in the sunlight sort of transaction. It's nothing done behind the back of the beneficiaries. But like Joe said, just to show transparency from day one, we put it in writing and have our clients sign off that they knew that ahead of time.
Well, these my estate is going to be divided amongst five charities, none of which is based in Jacksonville. So is that a problem?
No, sir. No, that'd be great. Why? I'm a trustee on a lot of trusts like that. In fact, I have a picture that I'm really proud of me presenting a $1 million check to St. Jude's Hospital from one of my estates. I flew to Nashville to a special presentation to present it to. So
you had to check that check.
Yeah.
You couldn't get it in the overhead bin.
No, it's a huge one. Well, they made up a big a big picture check, I call it.
I've seen those.
So, anyway, if you have a great relationship with your attorney, go there. If you want to talk to someone else, if you didn't like the way that conversation with that attorney, I'm in Jacksonville every other week. I'd be glad to talk to you sometime. But if you have a good relationship, you definitely should just stay with that and go with it, I would think.
Amen.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Let's go to Sherry in Winter Haven.
Yes. Hello.
Hi, Sherry.
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning.
Attorney Pippin did my trust.
Well, that's me now. Be nice.
Yes, sir. Several years ago. But,
okay.
I tuned in late today, and I just heard the last seconds of something about a special reason now why to have your trust checked over again.
Well, we recommend trust be...
That's the reason.
Yeah, well, trust and will should be reviewed every 3 or 4 years. I mean, people die. People have different thoughts about who they want to leave money to. People want to add a church or a charity or change something about that. We were probably talking about the new Retirement Act. So did your trust, yes. Is your trust a beneficiary of any retirement accounts? Or do you have direct beneficiaries on the retirement accounts?
I don't think it. I think it's
yeah. Most people don't. I mean, but a few do, and that's what we were talking about.
Sherry, when was the last time you met with Joe?
I'm not sure. I think it's been more than 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. Go ahead and schedule a review with him. He'll be happy to sit down with you and just go over everything and make sure everything's copacetic. All right.
Okay, but the big urgency though was the retirement.
Yeah, but if you're retiring, if your trust is not the beneficiary of the retirement account, there's no urgency.
Okay, but anyway, soon, if it's been 3 or 4 years. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you. All right, let's try to do one more call to Mary Lou in Jacksonville. Mary Lou.
Yes.
We have probably less than a minute, so what can we do for you?
Okay, I'll make it quick. I already have a living trust, but the majority of it is going to St. Jude's Hospital, which you just mentioned.
Oh, how about that?
Mm-hmm. And I don't know what to do about all the CDs that I have. Will they go to... Because
Well, you know, you need to get those in there to the living trust. You need to get those retitled for yourself as trustee.
Oh. How do I retitle them?
All right. If you want to call me, in fact, I'm going to be in Jacksonville this Friday. I'd be glad to go over that with you. If you have your attorney that did the trust, you can talk to them, of course. But if you need additional...
Well, I don't...
Yeah, we don't charge anything for our first visit to come in and suss. I can look at your trust and tell you how to get all of your assets in the trust if you like.
Okay, I'll call you...
When should I call? I was just give it the number to everyone who wants to for us to contact us at 1-800-226.
Oh dear, I don't have a pen.
Okay, 1-800. You can probably remember it. 226.
Yes.
226-3529.
226-3529.
Yeah, three and then it's law on your L A W. 3529. 529 is law basically.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right, thank you. Patrick, give your contact information.
So you can reach out to me, Patrick Smith, at attypip.com in Pinellas County, 727-586-3306, extension 306, in the central part of the state, 352-241-8760, or on Instagram, Facebook, at Attorney Patrick Smith.
All right, thank you so much for listening. We're here every week having fun helping you. So tune in, tell your friends, and you have a great, safe weekend, and hope your Super Bowl team wins. So long.